You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Okay, here's my rant. I think I've had one every day, but I want to talk back to the people who are saying, I don't care what the government knows about me. So I would start with apologies to Pastor Niemöller by saying first they came for the whistleblowers, but I was not a whistleblower, so I did not speak up. The NSA spying scandal, this whole thing, has produced pretty wide-range reactions. But most people who have a strong opinion about it seem to be in one of two camps. There are those who are outraged with our federal government and its NSA, and they say there's no justifiable reason for average American citizens to be under such high scrutiny from intelligence agencies. And on the other end of the spectrum, there are those who say, hey, so what? I don't care if the government's listening to my calls, reading my emails, seeing who I text. I've done nothing wrong. I've lived an exemplary life. I have nothing to worry about, nothing to hide. This latter group make up the people, perhaps even more than the NSA itself, who are threatening political dissent in America. Seriously. If you think you've got nothing to worry about, nothing to hide, and by the way, feel free to call in and try and tell me that that's the case, you are a bigger problem than the NSA. You may live an exemplary life. You may have no problems with your government right now. But at some point in time, somewhere down the road, our government may do something. It could be something really big, something really small, to which you object. And if you stand up and speak out about that perceived injustice, or decide to run for political office to help correct that perceived injustice, and this new, toxic, and all-knowing government you are standing up to knows that just a few years ago you did something online that was bad, or you had an affair, you said something disparaging or others, it can now use that information to silence you, blackmail you, or stop you from becoming politically active. Say 5 years ago you accidentally visited a neo-Nazi website online or attended a meeting at which, unbeknownst to you, there was a radical or even a criminal or a terrorist. And back then, years ago, you mentioned that meeting to a friend in an email. If the government had this information and wanted to maliciously go after you today, they could just drop by your house one day and simply say, we can assert you have connections to this individual and we're willing to smear you in public with it. Maybe even to arrest you for it, even if we'd never be able to get a conviction. You really sure you want to speak out against us? I mean, this is pretty much what happened to President Obama when his association to Bill Ayers first came to light. Republicans in Washington pounced on him for being associated with that radical leader, even though the two had only met briefly a couple of years earlier, and Obama had long ago disavowed Ayers. A high-profile presidential candidate like Obama, with a massive institutional support, millions of dollars, you know, United States senator, can withstand, you know, this kind of charge of consorting with the enemy. But could you? And that's just the beginning. This sort of thinking that it's just fine if the government knows pretty much everything you've ever done sets up the possibility of a far more serious form of tyranny. This is the really important stuff. One of the most corrosive yet subtle forms of government abuse of their citizens is the everybody is a criminal model. Students of the law and students of history know of it as selective prosecution. There are two steps necessary to put this into place. First, you pass a law that pretty much everyone has broken or will break at some point in their lives, but nonetheless has serious consequences, while assuring everybody it's only for serious offenders. You actually only use it against serious offenders, and you don't enforce it widely. Over time, pretty much everyone's going to break that law, and could be if the government ran amok or wanted to take that person out, subject to prosecution. Everybody's a criminal. Second, build the database. The only other thing necessary to put the heavy boot heel of an oppressive government on the necks of those people an out-of-control government doesn't like is a database which includes the proof against every citizen who has ever broken that law. For example, look at our nation's copyright laws and the current laws regarding downloading music and video or even articles, photos, or web pages from the Internet. It's pretty much impossible these days to find anyone with access to the Internet who hasn't at least once illegally downloaded a song, a movie, a picture, some other piece of copyrighted material, emailed a cute kitty picture to a friend, a picture that was copyrighted. In other words, nearly everybody is a criminal. Right now, our government only rarely prosecutes people who do this sort of thing. But if they wanted to, if another Richard Nixon, or worse, became president, and he wanted to take you out, and he had a copy of everything you've ever downloaded or emailed or forwarded, you could spend a good chunk of your life in prison. And odds are nobody would even notice. Seriously, criminal penalties for first-time offenders of our copyright laws. 5 years in prison, up to 5 years in prison, up to $250,000 in fines. Civil penalties can run into many thousands of dollars, more thousands of dollars, and in damages and legal fees. The minimum penalty is $750 a song. Now, say this new version of Richard Nixon, let's call him Peter King, knows that 5 years ago you went on to a music website and downloaded some music illegally, or you got it from a friend, an email, and you forwarded it to another friend. And say this new Nixon, President King, also knows that through monitoring your emails, you plan to show up at a political protest over the weekend. Occupy or Tea Party, doesn't matter. Tyranny is nonpartisan. Remember you had left-wing tyranny, Joe Stalin, right-wing tyranny, Adolf Hitler. Boom! The police are knocking down your door and you're in jail before breakfast and before the protest. Think it's impossible? Variations on that were used against protesters at the Republican National Convention in 2008 before they even got out of their house. And variations on that theme are used daily in oppressive nations around the world. You violated a tax law, or you violated the law that requires you to register your change of address. These are common examples, the former typically from the Middle East, the latter typically from Asian countries. And here's the biggest crime against a democratic republic that people who say, I don't care what they know, are committing. By consenting to the government gathering information on them, these people are consenting to the government collecting information on all of us. If enough people consent or just fail to dissent, and that apparent national consensus sets the stage for the soft tyranny of selective prosecution. This is how most oppressive regimes around the world work, both modern and historic. When everybody is a criminal or everybody has something to fear being exposed and the government knows everything about everybody, that government has the absolute power to totally shut down dissent or political activism. By failing to speak out against wide net data collection without Fourth Amendment required warrants of probable cause sworn under oath that the data is being collected on a crime or a criminal, these people are helping establish what Edward Snowden called the architecture of tyranny. They're setting up a power structure that's just waiting for the next Richard Nixon or worse. Republican Congressman Peter King recently lied about what Glenn Greenwald reported, and then on the basis of that lie said that King should be arrested and prosecuted. If somebody like Peter King ever sits in the Oval Office, the next person he wants to throw in prison could be you. We have to stand up and speak out. This is truly a Pastor Niemöller moment. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So to those who say, I got nothing to hide, I don't care if the government wants to snoop on me, give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Welcome back. Occupying the Media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. So far, and we've got a number of calls. I'm going to get to y'all who are on hold. I'm going to get to you in just a second here. But so far, I don't see any calls where somebody is saying, I don't mind. And yet, that seems to be the emerging position as this thing starts to become partisan. The Peter Kings of the world, throw Glenn Greenwald in jail. Let's not talk about the national security state. Let's not talk about the privatization of the NSA. By the way, I wrote a piece yesterday talking about the NSA and saying the NSA and saying it's time to break up the Department of Homeland Security. The NSA, of course, is part of the Department of Defense. And I think that it's really important that we do both. The Department of Homeland Security is this huge, conglomeration of a whole bunch of different agencies that, frankly, I think probably worked better when they were separate. And the NSA is part of the Department of Defense, which should be forbidden by law from contracting its core functions. It used to be, soldiers were everything from janitors to guards, and that, that's a fine use for soldiers. And, a way to get started in the military, peeling potatoes. It's honest work. But now we're paying Halliburton $150,000 a year for that, and it's nuts. So, anyway, Shane in Newcastle, Indiana, your thoughts on this, my concern about what sometimes is referred to as soft tyranny or the everybody is a criminal or the selective prosecution model coming to America soon.
Hey, Tom, really enjoy your show. I'm a former Republican turned Democrat after some things in my life changed, and I found out that the Republicans don't care for the poor people or those that's unemployed. But I follow your show every day, and I can't agree with you more. The people that say that they don't care, they're not doing anything wrong. I was on a website earlier just browsing, and it said that the average American citizen breaks 3 federal laws in a day without even knowing it, and I said that's pretty scary.
Wow.
And I know your thoughts on privatizing prisons, and I agree with you. I don't think they should be privatized.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they can lobby Congress, who's to say that, the privatization of prisons that the Republicans want done, they don't start doing research and say, hey, we've got X amount of Americans out here breaking these federal laws each and every day. We need to start enforcing these laws. And then the next thing you know, they're knocking on the people that think that they're the average good citizen, don't do anything wrong, and they're going to jail thinking, what in the world?
Yeah. Yeah, especially if they decide to get politically active. This is thank you, Shane. Well said, and thank you for your kind words. This back when the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was first being passed, and there's a great TED Talk on this where the fellow who does the TED Talk talks about the $8 billion iPod. Just Google $8 billion iPod, and you'll see you can see this little 15-minute thing where he just blows this apart. But basically, if you fill an iPod with music that you bootlegged off the web, it's supposed, according to the copyright law, according to the industry, it has diminished the revenues of the industry by $8 billion. Right. And you can spend 5 years in prison and have $8 billion worth of fines. And when this law was passed, there were many of us who were saying, wait a minute, this is overreach. This is wild overreach. There should be a carve-out. I mean, if you want to go after somebody who is pirating stuff, who is taking copyrighted material, who's videotaping TV shows and stripping the commercials out and then putting them up on their own website and charging people $2 to visit the website, but then they can see all the TV shows without any commercial, without paying any royalties. Something genuinely abusive with a profit motive, as opposed to sending a picture of that cute kitten to your mother. I don't have a problem with going after genuine bootleggers and pirates, although I'm on the record as saying I think our copyright and trademark laws are absurdly long-lived, but that's a whole other thing. But the kittens going to mom? No, come on. John in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I love your show. The one thing about this wiretapping thing. I mean, we can go back to all the way back to when they enacted the Patriot Act after 9/11.
Yep.
And the big question that I had, and I believe a lot of people have been having, and it's not being talked about since they're now bringing it to light again, is that can people in the government use the wiretaps and this illegal wiretapping or legal, whichever way you want to say it, can they use that information on the stock market to manipulate the stock market, insider trading? I believe that that issue is at the core part of this, because I believe that there are people that are in the government, congressmen, senators.
Well, they can legally do it.
What?
Congressmen, senators, and their staffs can legally do day trading based on insider information, not on wiretaps. But, for example, Congressman Joe Blow is working on a bill that's going to, you know, pass $5 billion contract off to Lockheed, people in his staff can be buying, you know, buy options on Lockheed, basically betting Lockheed stock his price is going to go up, and doing it in a very, very highly leveraged way. And not only can they, but many of them do. As far as I know, there are no Democrats who do this, because Nancy Pelosi has come out strongly against this and tried to pass a law against it. But among Republican members of Congress, this is not an uncommon practice. But as to, you know, people inside the NSA or the contractors who can actually notice, okay, look at this. Lockheed is having a lot of conversations with Northrop. Maybe they're going to merge or something like that. Yeah, I think that's possible, too. So I'm with you. But, John, the ability of Congress people to have that carve-out, that's something that needs to be done away with.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Congressman Brian Baird is the guy who first brought this to the public's attention, in fact, on this program about 6 years ago. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to your media support group for We the People of the United States of America. Sean in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Sean, it says you disagree with me, so you go to the top of the line. What's up?
How you doing, Tom? Can you hear me clearly?
Just fine. Can you hear me clearly?
Oh, yes, I hear you clearly.
Good.
I don't disagree with you. When it came to the working class, I was always a Democrat, but I voted for Obama, but I'm sort of stepping back out of either one. I'm more independent now because I hate the way everything's been going. It seems like way back when George Bush was president, he got everything he wanted. And Obama was for change, and I was all for it. And it's like he's not good. I don't know if it's his fault or whose fault it is.
Well, I'd recommend you read Robert Draper's book, In Whose Name We Do, or whatever. It's a weird title. But anyhow, in his book, he lays out how on the night that Obama was inaugurated, as we were going to the inaugural balls here in Washington, D.C. That night, 15 members of Congress, Republican members of Congress, met in a private room at the Caucus Room restaurant here in Washington, D.C., and basically swore a blood oath to each other to do everything they could to obstruct the Obama administration so he would have absolutely no success. In fact, I think it was Jeb Hensarling, one of the members there, said, "We have to adopt a Taliban mentality. The Taliban, you know, taught us how to do this." And they've done that. You know, they've done that for 5 years now. Anything that that would improve the economy, they have fought against. It's why they're debating abortion, and voting on abortion today in the House of Representatives instead of jobs bills. It's why for 5 years they've refused to pick up a jobs bill, for 3 years now that the Republicans have controlled the House of Representatives. They've refused to pick up a jobs bill. It's why the House passed nearly 100 jobs bills during the 2 years that Nancy Pelosi ran it, and the Senate Republicans shot down, filibustered every single one. So, you know, if you want to know where the problem is, it's fairly well documented. But what my software was saying here is that you had said to Danielle, who's answering the phone for us today, that you don't care if the government's watching you?
I really don't have no choice in that matter. I'm an over-the-road truck driver, owner-operator,
mm-hmm.
and I have what they call a Qualcomm. It's got a GPS. They can pinpoint my location. They know when I sleep. They know when the truck stops, where it stopped. They know everything about me.
Right, but the that you're talking about is not the government. It's the company that you're working for, isn't it?
Well, the company, yes, but they have to, they get audited by the government, which is the Department of Transportation.
Right.
And they can go in and say, okay, where was he here? Where was he there? I had a friend that was implicated on a crime, and what saved his butt was it proved that he was on duty driving the truck at the time of the crime, and he was over 1,000 miles away.
Yeah, well, that's good. Isn't really the purpose of this? I mean, I realize why companies want to know where their employees are at all times. And, you know, we can talk about the soft tyranny of the workplace if you'd like. But your employer, you know, they have the power to fire you, but they don't have the power to imprison you. But isn't the federal demand that your company have at least some level of oversight over that? In order to prevent the problems that we had back in the 50s and 60s, I mean, there were a lot of reports about truck drivers who were driving 16. Actually, no, it was more in the 70s and 80s, particularly as the trucking industry got deregulated, and these trucking companies just started pushing their drivers really, really hard. Drivers driving 15, 16, 18 hours, taking speed, hallucinating, and, you know, getting involved in god awful, horrific accidents that not only killed them but families.
Oh, I agree. That was when trucking was sort of new, and then they were trying to fix the problems.
Yeah.
But, you know, it seems like the government has stepped in a whole lot more, you know, to document everything we do.
Yeah.
Sleep, what kind of health condition we're in, you know, everything. Which, you know, it is to a point where you have to be safe, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, if I'm driving down the road with my wife and three kids in the car, and there's an 18-wheeler with, you know, what kind of weight would you carry? You know, 17,000 pounds of something in it, or, you know, some mass, you know, moving at 70 miles an hour. I'd like to know that the guy driving it, you know, his hands aren't trembling, and he's not, you know, that he's in decent shape. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. I totally agree.
I'm a pilot. I gotta, when I fly, I haven't flown in years, but I'm still a licensed pilot. If I were to go back to flying, I'd have to get a medical every year.
They're not as regulated as we are, though. They are regulated, but they're not overly regulated like we are.
Huh.
But, go ahead.
Well, I don't know that to be the case. I think the commercial pilots are very heavily regulated. And again, for good reason. I mean, if you're in a plane with 300 other people, you'd like to know that that pilot has had 8 hours of sleep and hasn't been drinking in the last 24 hours and is in good health.
Oh, yeah. For the most part, most drivers that I work with, you know, safety is our highest calling.
Right.
The president's over everything.
Sure.
And
sure. Well, that's a good thing. But increasingly in this day and age of, you know, private contracting out to truckers and trucking companies not allowing unions and making it, you know, cutting people's wages and things, people looking to make an extra buck here and there can be problematic. And now we've got Mexican trucks, you know, on our roads, you know, another brilliant decision, which was a deregulation, right?
I mean, what they did with them is they're not under the same scrutiny as we are, which we should, and OIDA and the union has been pushing to say, hey, if they're going to come across here, they're going to be under the same, you know, scrutiny as us.
Yeah, so you realize that you were just a minute ago complaining about big government having too many regulations, and right now you want bigger government to regulate the Mexican truckers.
Yeah, if they're going to regulate us, they should regulate them, because the Canadians that come across, they're regulated just like we are.
Right.
And they should be no different.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. Sean, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you, and drive safely. Tony in Shirley, New York. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Oh, it's not a bad day, considering the weather.
Indeed. Yeah, it's coming through here.
Oh, but, yeah, I had no choice but to let this sense of outrage I see now. I was working in I was actually the only progressive Democrat in a business Republican working environment. And at the time when the Patriot Act was being proposed, I was the only one within my organization that had an enormous amount of outrage, because I told them, I said, listen, once you start to sacrifice your Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendment rights, this is a slippery slope that's only going to progressively get worse. Everybody said, listen, if it's all for safety, I have no problems giving this up. Mm-hmm. Now we see nothing but a false sense of outrage that everybody's listening in. They're tracking my phone numbers. Wait a minute. We had even mainstream documentarians like Michael Moore who tried to eliminate this on one of his on Fahrenheit 9/11,
sure.
And some and other documentarians that did the same thing as you did also. I don't understand where this sudden rampage or this false sense of outrage is suddenly coming from when everybody knew 10 years ago that this was going to be the end result.
Yeah. There were a number of us who were saying it. I don't think that everybody knew that. I think the most people thought, oh, you know, we'll give government a lot of power and they won't use it. Right. And today Thomas Friedman in the New York Times is saying, well, you know, it's I'm not so worried about them snooping on me as I am there being another 9/11. Because if there's another 9/11, then people are going to stand up and say, I'll give away all of my liberties for a little bit of security, and then we'll lose everything. So we should lose something now. And it's like, huh? I mean, I think Friedman has gone over the edge, off the rails, around the corner, whatever you want to say. So, and Tony, I'm with you. 10 years ago, we should have. You know, just like with the Copyright Act, just all of these things, you know, when bad laws come along, we need to call them out and stop them. Steve in Haymarket, Virginia. Hey, Steve, what's up?
I was just thinking, the government's been watching me for years. I live on top of the mountain. But at any rate, that's a bad joke. My point was that how do you know that this dark scenario you were painting is not occurring right now?
The point that I was making is that to some extent it is. I mean, look at the number of FBI setups of, you know, the so-called terrorists that were just, you know, wannabe poor people or wannabe Muslims who got entrapped, A, or B, at the Republican National Convention in 2008 where in Minneapolis where they went in and, you know, kicked in the doors and dragged off those kids who were planning on protesting at the RNC, basically based on their emails. I mean, it is happening right now. It's just not happening right now in a huge, well, actually, it may be happening in a huge way, and we don't even know. It could be that Occupy people are being disappeared. I don't think that's the case.
I would think it would be more likely that Tea Party people would be disappeared, but that's beside the point.
Okay.
How would, you know, Barack Obama, no matter what happens in the government, he doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
If it's not on this teleprompter, you know, somebody else did that. Somebody else did that. I didn't do that. The buck didn't stop here. He's the most non-responsible person I've ever seen in the presidency.
Well, I understand your Republican outrage about this Democratic president, and that's fine. Can we agree that neither one of us wants an executive who can use capriciously the powers of government and who has every bit of data on everything we've ever done?
Don't insult me. I'm not a Republican.
Okay. Well, pardon the insult. Can we agree on that, though?
Well, yeah, but I mean, the Democrats, you know, it's worse, but the point is that I'm a conservative.
I see. All right. Steve, thank you for the call. So many people don't want to say they're Republicans now.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I find it really fascinating. Over the last, since the Bush administration, since about the middle of the Bush administration, probably 100 calls. I'm not a Republican. I'm conservative. I'm not a Republican. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you and Margie in Wisconsin Rapids. Is that Wisconsin? All I see is the W. Is it Wisconsin, Wyoming?
Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin.
Okay. So, sure.
I love you.
But
I love your show. You just ticked me off.
Okay. Tell me.
Number one, your concept of truck drivers is an outdated stereotype.
Okay.
Number two, Qualcomm and the e-logs that we are using have been forced on us by the government for years.
Okay.
Yes, companies are starting to use them. Number three, those Qualcomms are in constant communication with satellites. Number four, we can be pulled over at any time without probable cause for no reason and have those inspected. I have had this done to me. A friend of mine had it done. He was put out of service, could not move for 10 hours. for something that actually was not supposed to have been out of service.
Now, that is true of commercial pilots, and that is true of ship captains as well.
Right. Next.
But hang on just a second, Margie.
Let me finish.
Go for it.
These are being, this is now mandated that we must have these by MAP 21. And they're also looking at putting this on telemetrics so that a police car driving by our truck can read all of our computers.
Right. And in other words, know what's in your truck and know where you came from and where you're going.
They can know everything. They can. Oh, they also want to put cameras, not pointing out at traffic, but on the drivers and in the cabs. Where we sleep.
I would have a problem with that. I would have a real problem with that.
This is...
Margie...
And by the way, they're putting this, they're testing it on trucks, and these black boxes that we have is what they're going to start putting in cars.
Right.
It's one of those things where you say... I didn't speak for you because I wasn't one of them.
Right, your Pastor Niemöller moment. So you're saying that the truckers are having a Pastor Niemöller moment. Okay, first of all, thank you for correcting me about my outdated stereotype. And in fact, I'd like to hear a little more about that. Number two, thanks for correcting me that it's the government that is requiring these things and not the companies. And, you know, obviously you're a trucker. You know this stuff, right? Am I correct?
Yes, I am a trucker.
Great. So I trust you as a source.
I
trust you as a source. And it's been a long time since I've been inside a commercial truck. I have been, but it's been a long time. What I do know is that that commercial pilots and that commercial ship captains can be stopped at any point, at any time, by the FAA or by the maritime authorities and questioned pee in a cup, anything, you know, because they are commercial operators in the public byways, as it were. How are truck drivers different from that? Why should they not be subject to that as well, since you're arguably driving, particularly if you're carrying something like gasoline, you know, you're driving a multi-ton bomb down the road at 70 miles an hour?
Here's the difference. First of all, most pilots do not live in the cockpit.
Right. Number no, I'm two. With you on the cameras in the cockpit. I'm totally with you on that.
Right. Number two, the other things that they're recording is voice. The black boxes in airplanes, those are searched when a plane crashes.
Right.
Our black boxes are searched at any time. That is the difference.
Okay.
Yes, I can be called pulled over and asked to urinate in a cup. I understand that. I have no problem with that. I can add, you know, I have no problem showing my log. What I have a really big problem with is the level of electronic monitoring, not only of when I'm driving a truck, but there's a new push into the next law, the regulation that's coming down and is in progress,
right.
Is they're certifying who I can go to a doctor to get my physical certification instead of being able to go to a
Margie, I can tell you as a pilot, I have to go, to get a pilot certification, I have to go to an FAA-approved physician. And that's because... The FAA has certain criteria. You have to be able to, you know, there are certain tests. You know, how are you going to respond at 10,000 feet of air pressure, you know, the air pressure associated with that versus 1,000 feet? That's not the normal thing that a normal doctor would know how to check out. And
okay, the next one that they're doing
is
that they're going to have to report this on a government computer and report your physical by the end of the business day to the federal government about the results of your physical.
But the same thing is true of maritime folks and commercial pilots, commercial maritime folks. So,
I don't know about those. I know about truck drivers.
Yeah.
And
here's where I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with you that it's absolutely creepy to have a camera in the cab that is looking at you and particularly where you're living and sleeping. I think that that's wrong. And I agree with you that any recording of what you're doing, the voice recording or for that matter video recording of what's going on inside the truck or even outside of the truck, really should only be inspected if there is probable cause to believe that you have committed a crime, that you're driving erratically, for example. Are you under influence? Are you being distracted? Do you have, five of your best friends in the cab with you, whatever? Or if there's an accident. In other words, it should be looked at the same way that commercial airlines black boxes are. I totally agree with you on that. We just have a minute before we have to end this hour. What other stereotype have I missed that you'd like to inform our listeners and viewers about truckers?
That we're always sleepy, and that it has been shown in study after study after study, mm-hmm, that the majority of truck crashes that involve a truck and a vehicle,
right,
are the cause of the other vehicle.
Yeah.
Second one that is frequently cited, saying that however many truck drivers are driving sleepy, studies only crashes of a single vehicle truck.
Right.
From the hours.
I got it. And that makes sense, Margie, because you people are professionals. You know what you're doing. Margie, thanks for the call, and thanks for setting me straight. Good talking with you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Mike Papantonio on the line with us, the attorney and host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. Hey, Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how are you? I love your cat burglar story.
Cat burglar story?
Yeah.
Oh, in the news. Yeah. It's a hoot. I've been ranting about the NSA, 16 Ways to Sunday, this whole thing for the last, I don't know how long, I guess since the weekend, since this thing broke.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing you probably pretty much know my take on it. I'm curious yours.
Well, I mean, there's so many parts to the story, Tom. One thing that I have to remind myself is, just like you, I'm covering this story a lot. And I have to remind myself that this is the kind of story that you need to cover a lot. And then just as you think you've covered it too much, you need to cover it some more. I've had to give some serious thought to that, because you're thinking, okay, you're out there with this every day. You're given a new variation of the story every day. Is it too much? It is not too much. It's kind of like that notion, just when you think it's too much, push ahead. Look, to me, the part I love about this story, and there's so many parts, but the idea that the American public might understand finally that this is corporate America involved in doing this. This is the Palantir organization, for example, or the AHB Gary, or the Booz Allen Hamilton. Those are all private corporations that have a quasi-relationship with the government. Now, what people miss, Tom, is that Palantir, for example, this story, Lee Fong tells an incredible story, and Greenwald told the story also, about the time that the Chamber of Commerce was using Palantir to target just a whole host of people. The SEIU, the UFW, Change to Win, the AFL-CIO, but they were doing that in a quasi-governmental relationship. The Chamber of Commerce had met with Palantir, and they said, we have some targets. We want you to go after MoveOn.org. We want you to go after Glenn Greenwald. And we're going to pay you to do things like creating false documents, raiding their computer system, creating false personas, hacking into their family's computers, their children's computers. The only way that was discovered was by Anonymous. Anonymous found out about it, released all the documents, thousands of documents. They found that Hunton and Williams, no surprise here, the defense firm of the corporate, I hate to use the word defense firm, what there is, they're the corporate, this is a corporate gaggle of lawyers that do everything corporate America wants them to do, but they were working for the Chamber of Commerce to have this spook organization that also worked for the government. And so people are, I think, now finally landing on how important this is. This isn't one of those stories where you just say, gee whiz, I'm not a terrorist. I'm not doing anything wrong. There's nothing that I have to hide. If you're doing that, if somebody that's following the story is doing that, it is the most supremely selfish position you could possibly take, because this is not about you. This is about the next generation. This is a generation that was able to benefit by the Fourth Amendment, by the Constitution. We were able to benefit by that. And so now to say this doesn't matter because I'm not affected, it's the same thing as saying climate change doesn't matter because I'm not affected today. What about the next generation?
Yeah. The point that I made in my rant today and in an op-ed that we published over at Truthout is that under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, if you have forwarded a cute little kitty photo that you got in email from somebody to your mother or your brother-in-law or something, and it's a copyrighted photo, or obviously shared a song or a movie or TV or anything like that,
right,
you have committed a crime that for which you can go to jail for up to 5 years, mm-hmm, and have a $250,000 fine. And if the government knows everything that everybody's done, this is one of the ways that China locks people down, is you can only leave your community with the permission of the local police department, yet nobody ever gets that permission. So pretty much everybody's a criminal. So anytime they want to bust somebody, it's like, okay, you. And now if everybody has broken the law, then the selective enforcement becomes the instrument of tyranny. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it does. First of all, we have to, you have to understand, I mean, most people don't understand exactly what you just said. They kind of hear the peripheral of this story. Let me bring it home, okay? I'm a jazz saxophone player. That's something I do. I play jazz saxophone. So I was interested in a couple of arrangements that Chet Baker had done on his trumpet. I go in and I start searching Chet Baker. I find some specific songs, some specific music. And okay, so I get it. And then within 3 days, Chet Baker is showing up on every search I make, whether it's my iPad, whether it's my phone, whatever it is.
Right.
Now, to land that is the very edge. That's what they're showing us. That's what corporate America, and this is
right,
a corporate America story. That's only what they're showing us.
Right. And the difference between corporate America and government is that corporate America does not have the power to show up at your house with a gun and say, we are going to put you in jail for downloading a Chet Baker song that was copyrighted and you didn't pay for.
Right. Right. Well, look, to me, this story, I have to, again, I come back to this idea of resisting the notion that people are hearing too much. I get emails, they said, Pap, can you please talk about something else? Well, no, I really can't right now.
Right.
Because this is not, I'm trying to take a completely unselfish position, not just for myself, but for my child, who should have the same protection under the Fourth Amendment. Look, we had to fight our way back after the church hearings. We had to fight our way back. We found out, as you and I have talked about, they were spying on us. Journalists, feminists, environmentalists, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, they were spying on them, following them, had pictures, threatening them, all types of ugly conduct taking place. 40 years later, not only are they doing that, they're empowered to do these things. And somebody's saying, well, the information they're getting is just a telephone number. We don't know that. We don't know what in the hell Roger Vinson signed, the judge that signed the 215 permission to extend this search with Verizon. We don't know what they were given. We don't know how extensive it is. We only know the tip of the iceberg. We do know this. We do know that the people, the NSA, who were counting on to do the right thing, those are the same people who lied us into Iraq. Those are the same people who intentionally gave us bad information and got us involved in one of the worst wars that we've seen in decades, a disaster. So there are things that we know that should cause us to say, I want to know more about this story. And hopefully that's what the American, I hope the American public holds on and says, no, this is not one of those deals that's overkilled at all.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The question, it wasn't Tacitus. It was somebody of that era, though. One of the old Roman or Greek guy who said, "Who will watch the watchers?"
Mm.
And it's like in a democracy, the whole constitutional thing that we set up is that we watch the watchers.
Mm. Tom, are you seeing the edge of the story that's going right to Wall Street? No. Palantir. Well, here it is. Palantir, for example, if you look at who the people are behind Palantir, they're the joint, the John Poindexter group. It's the Brian Cunningham group. It's the same people who have always been in government who now have moved into the private sector. Now, their relationship with Wall Street is they get their money from Wall Street to launch these things like Palantir or H.G. Geary. So they give Wall Street is in up to their eyeballs in this because they see it as a new frontier to make a lot of money. It kind of raises the question, why is this administration so willing to protect Wall Street? And you start looking further and further. You look at some of this great work that's done by people like Lee Fong or Glenn Greenwald, so many of them, that are tracing that money, and it's becoming more and more evident.
Yeah, Lee was on the show the other day. He said it looks like 70% of all the national security work now has been outsourced to these companies.
Yes.
That's mind-boggling. Mike Papantonio, Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. Check it out. Mike, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Great having you on, Pat. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If you want to hear some good radio, ringoffireradio.com. They got a TV show now, too. It's all over there. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. Oh, this is entertaining. Bruce in Aurora, Colorado. You don't mind if the government's following you around?
Of course not. I ain't got nothing to hide, man.
Okay.
I have nothing to hide at all.
Great. Well, here's my riff, and let me just repeat it real quickly. Is by your saying that, that may well be true for you. And you may, in your whole entire life, never, ever want to stand up to the government. You may never be, you know, slapped down by a police officer and you feel that it was wrong in a way that was wrong and you want to take it on. Or you may never want to show up at a political protest rally or anything at all. But by saying that you don't mind the government snooping on absolutely everything you do, scooping up all your emails, all the websites that you visit, by saying that, you're basically saying that nobody, you're not going to be ever a political activist, but you're essentially forcing everybody in America to never be a political activist, which means it's the end of political activism. Isn't that a bad thing?
Well, in a way, it's a more of a double-edged sword. Okay, as far as email goes, you send an email, you type an email, you send an email, somebody deletes it. Where does it go? It has to go somewhere. If you deleted it, it means that you didn't really want it or didn't need it.
No, but when it got sent, that's when the government grabbed it, is when it passed through the servers. So whether you deleted it or not, it's still sitting on the government's computer years later.
It can sit on anybody's computer. I mean, I've gotten junk mail from people that I don't know. That's not part of the government. But just to get to the story, I mean, to the point is this. Most Americans, they will not compromise security over privacy. That's a double-edged sword. They want security, but they don't want it. They want privacy, but they don't want it. I know a couple of months ago it was about the drone.
Mm-hmm.
You put a guy in a helicopter, that's a drone. If you like it or not, that's a drone.
Sure.
It's okay to chase somebody or high-speed chase a criminal with a helicopter. That's a drone. That's some form of a drone. It helps us out for national security.
I don't disagree with you on that, Bruce. On the other hand, if that drone is going to be parked in the sky in a way that it's looking into my bedroom window for hours and hours every day, I think that that's only appropriate if somebody has gone before a judge. This is what the Fourth Amendment requires. If somebody has gone before a judge and sworn under oath that they believe that a crime is being committed in that bedroom, and then that drone, then the judge issues a warrant, and then the police have the authority to use that drone to spy on us. But otherwise, you know, yeah, I got no problem with using drones as traffic helicopters. You know, it's a lot cheaper, probably a lot safer. Using drones for you know, police work, looking for speeders, whatever. I mean, it's just you're absolutely right. It's just a less expensive version of a helicopter. But a helicopter can't hover outside your bedroom window for hours.
But has it been any cases of a drone hanging outside of somebody's window, looking at somebody undressed or anything like that? And there's been cases of peeping Tom looking through windows.
Bruce, there was. Do you remember? This was about 3 years ago. There was a big scandal. It was in the news, but although you might have missed it, But I, you know, I caught it because I, you know, I do the news every day here, so I can't not pay attention to the news. Where there was a group of, I believe they were NSA people. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they were, who were listening in on the intimate and very often sexual telephone conversations between soldiers in Iraq and their wives back here in the United States. These were supposed to be secure, protected communications. These guys were hacking in on them. They were, and some of them were Skype things, so there were pictures and women would flash themselves and things like that. And they were making discs of this stuff and swapping them around. And you know, it got busted. They got busted. It got out in the open. But the fact that the government had that information now, if they, and that's in an environment where the watchers are actually being watched. I mean, that's how they got busted. Is the, you know, their chain of command caught them at that, as far as I recall. But now we've got a situation where the, nobody's watching the watchers, as far as we can tell. So they may well be having a drone outside your bedroom window, and you don't know about it, and I don't know about it.
Okay, that may be true. And far as that story goes, I've heard bits and pieces of it through, you know, over the barbecue grill, beer sure. conversation type deal.
Yeah, I think
my personal opinion is this. Sometimes, hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Sometimes we have to protect ourselves from ourselves. And what I mean by that, those guys are serving our country with honor and integrity. But at times, I believe that some type of internal affairs have to be implemented because you never know. Even in our government, stuff has been leaked.
Oh, nobody was, you know, I'm not objecting. I don't think the soldiers were objecting to their being, to the government having the ability to monitor those conversations or even occasionally dipping in just to make sure that they're just talking about sex. What, where they stepped over the line was when they started listening to the, to, you know, hour-long conversations, videotaping them, audio taping them, you know, making sex tapes for, you know, to pass along to their friends and things like this. And this is just about sex. I mean, what happens when it gets more serious? What happens when it becomes, you know, they're going to come after you. I mean, you know, look at what J. Edgar Hoover tried to do against Martin Luther King. He actually sent an agent to suggest, to just nakedly suggest to Martin Luther King that he should simply commit suicide. Because they had the tape of him having an affair, and they were going to release it to the public, and it was going to devastate his family and all this kind of stuff. And King just basically told him where to put it. But I mean, this was the corruption of power by J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI back in the day that, you know, Frank Church brought out. They got brought out in the Church Committee hearings in 72 and 73, and we put an end to that right up until 2001, and then George Bush flipped the switch, and now we're back to Richard Nixon time. And, you know, it's a libertarian conservative mantra to say, I don't trust the government. But I think all of us should say somebody needs to be watching the watchers. Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And thanks for listening there in Colorado to AM 760. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past. Well, are we in a Pastor Niemöller moment? Is this really that serious in your mind? Ken Brewer, this is hysterical. Yeah, the governor of Arizona, the Republican governor of Arizona, Jan Brewer is... demanding that the Republican-controlled legislature in Arizona increase, you know, take the federal government's Medicaid money. This is the money for poor people and children. In Vermont, they actually have a name. They called it Dr. Dinosaur when we lived in Vermont. This was Howard Dean's idea. In some states, they just call it Medicaid. In some states, they get, you know, they brand it. And the Republicans keep insisting on saying, you know, Jan Brewer wants to take Obamacare money. And she's like, it's not Obamacare money, it's Medicaid money. But it's Obamacare that's expanding the Medicaid money. So poor Jan has a problem. She has a real problem. Eddie, Mike in Vail, Arizona. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I just love your program. You know, one of the things that confuse a lot of us is the way, you know, our elected officials, you know, label, you know, these new programs and these new initiatives. You know, Patriot Act, well, what's patriotic about giving up our constitutional rights? You know, Clean Skies Initiative has nothing about, you know, cleaning up the air. It allows corporations to dirty the air.
Right.
Now, the Pension Protection Act, you know, put the burden of the pensions on the taxpayers.
Now, you realize that every single one of these things you've named so far were Republican initiatives.
Well, and it just seems to me, you know,
the Democrats typically, you know, the Democrats come up with these crummy names, but, you know, SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. I mean, couldn't they come up with something that had an acronym that spelled out KIDS? You know, it's because it's food stamps, right? Or,
well, it seems,
go ahead.
Yeah, it just seems to me that if these bills were, or these initiatives were accurately depicted, I mean, who's not going to vote for the Patriot Act?
I know, and I agree with you. And the Republicans have gotten really good at this, and the Democrats need to get good at it. I mean, like the low-income heating assistance program. It's called LIHEAP, right? Which sounds like it either involves liars, or, you know, maybe it's something you should avoid when you're walking through a cow pasture. I mean, LIHEAP, really?
So when you couple that with free trade, I mean, all these things.
Yeah, which is bipartisan.
They're Trojan horse bills.
Yep.
And they're meant to confuse. So, again, the first step, for all of us to help all of us understand, is it just seems like we need to legitimize and accurately depict what these things are and not call them something they're not.
You know, one small step in that direction, and you have to give them credit for this, during the Clinton administration, early on. In fact, I think it was the first year of Bill Clinton's administration. He got a law passed that said that legislation had to explain in clear English what it meant. And, you know, so it could be read by people who were not just lawyers. And, yeah, that's a good start. Maybe we should have something that argues about the naming of them. But, Mike, excellent point. Thanks for the call. Tony in Laguna Beach, California. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tom, can you hear me?
I can.
Here, let me get off my speakerphone.
Thank you.
I don't know how to approach this, but effectively, I know why the program is called PRISM, and it may not even be illegal because of the way it's being done. All right, yeah, follow me here.
Oh, I don't think it's illegal. I think it's unconstitutional, but I don't think it's illegal.
Oh, okay.
There's a difference.
There certainly is. Do you remember the incident where they caught an AT&T employee came forward and testified about how a closet was built in one of their buildings in New York and was
San Francisco. Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Or San Francisco, right.
Yeah, they were looking at the long lines going out to China.
Well, what they were actually doing, being that AT&T is a peering ISP, in other words, there's about 12 or 15 of them in the world where everything concentrates.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T is one of them, Sprint's one of them. You can look them up in terms of it's a level one service provider.
Right.
So that's where a concentration.
They're the big tubes.
Fiber optics goes in. Right. It's all digital. It's all fiber optics.
Right.
It's all light. And by putting a prism, in other words, splitting the light, they can take the concentration and get a duplicate. They're literally getting a duplicate of all the traffic. Sure, the power, the amplification of the light goes down, but they can compensate for that going back in. But effectively, Google is the same thing. Yahoo's the same thing. Even though they're not peers, when you get when you get really close to the facility, when you get almost like if you got next to that facility, all the traffic that's going into Google, you can rest assured was Google's traffic. So that if you just split it there with a prism, with a mirror, you can get it all and concentrate it and store it. and then create whatever you want after the fact. That's
right.
Effectively what the program's doing.
That's, you know, Tony, it was right in front of me all this time, and it just never occurred to me that the big tubes, the big pipes, are all fiber optics, that it is light
right.
traveling through them, not electrons.
Right.
And that
right.
prisms don't just deflect light. They also separate it into its component pieces. So it's like the first step in untangling the content. It's a brilliant name for them to come up with.
Just ones and zeros.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
it is, absolutely. It's we've been doing it. We do it all the time on the ocean floor. We actually have submarines that will lift up the cable and capture all the traffic going in and out of the United States. This is what our government has been doing. We used to do it with satellite traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I had a girlfriend in the military who was off on Midway Island, and all she did was collect satellite data. You know, this is 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
But we've been doing this technology forever, only now we have the ability to store it and then analyze it after the fact.
Right, with these multi-teraflop computers that are being built in this giant facility that's being built out in Utah, it is pretty amazing. And the distinction, by the way, let me just clarify that distinction between constitutional and legal, or unconstitutional and illegal. Ever since 1803, the Supreme Court has asserted that they get to decide what the Constitution means. And that if Congress passes a law, that is the law of the land until the real kings and queens of America, the Supreme Court, decide whether or not that law is constitutional. And so as long as the law has not been struck down by the Supreme Court, under this doctrine of judicial review that we've been operating under since 1803, which is not in the Constitution, by the way, but in any case, until the Supreme Court strikes down a law, it is legal in the United States. You know, you can look at that law and say this is patently unconstitutional, and someday it may come before the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court may say it's unconstitutional and thus throw it out, and at which point it then becomes illegal to try to do whatever that law was allowing or not do whatever that law was preventing. But that's the difference between the two. And that's why, when I look at these programs, these mass data sweeps, the Fourth Amendment is not at all ambiguous. The Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution is one sentence long. And it says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects, which, you know, I would think in this modern day would include email and computers, against unreasonable searches and seizures, shall not be violated. And no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly or specifically describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. In other words, you can't just go door to door and gather up all the paperwork in everybody's house and then say, you know, we'll analyze it later, but we just got it all. And that was so clear to the founders, because that used to be done. These were called, what were they called? General warrants, Shano? We were talking about this the other day. Writs of assistance. Thank you very much. This is what the British used. They would come into a town and they'd say, I've got a writ of assistance. You know, we need to take, we're going to go literally door to door. We're going to go through every person's house. We're going to go through all their papers because we're looking for one guy that we think is seditious, who doesn't like King George III. And that's why they put this Fourth Amendment into the Constitution. It says the government can no longer do this. The only way you can spy on somebody, the only way you can violate the privacy and sanctity of their home, their person, or their personal effects is with a warrant. And that warrant can only be issued if somebody raises their hand and swears under oath that they believe that there is probable cause that an actual crime is being committed, and they do so before a judge. And, which involves the third branch of the government. And to the best of my knowledge, there's no judge that has said everybody in America is a criminal. So that's why I think it's unconstitutional, Tony. But it is written right there in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It is allowed. So anyway, am I being clear?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But it is tapping the lines. And there are laws that govern tapping lines,
right.
Whether it's one person or the entire world. You're right. There should be some oversight.
Yeah, exactly. Tony, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for your experience and for that. Wow, that insight. It's like, of course they're going to name it PRISM. This program that's spying on all of us by tapping into all the digital data going around the United States. Of course. That's incredible. Now, you got to give them credit for originality, I suppose. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm telling you, this is a big deal. This is not just, you know, no droids in this car, keep moving along. We'll be back with Victoria Jones. Poor Congressman Steve King. Illegal and aliens have just invaded my D.C. office. I think some dreamers went by to lobby, you know, but maybe he thought they were people from outer space or... I don't know. Anyhow. Ivan in Chicago, listening on WCPT. Hey, Ivan, welcome back.
Hey, what's up, my brother?
I'm here.
All you do, Tom.
Thank you.
You know, I just want to talk a little bit about how the media is attacking Snowden. You know,
yeah.
He's a high school dropout. He's dumb as a rock.
I know. Last night I saw Lawrence O'Donnell going off on this screed about, well, you know, when you go to college, you mature. And then the woman he was interviewing, she was like, well, I don't recall when I went through college and law school maturing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
come on. These
kids grow up with computers. You know, like that caller you had earlier saying, no way this guy could do it. Well, there is a way. There's always somebody smarter than you.
Sure.
Especially if he's trained to do the work. But the point I'm trying to get at is how the media is attacking this guy as a low-life, do-nothing. His girlfriend's a pole dancer. Why is he in China? Oh, well, I guess if I don't want to be redacted or locked up in prison like Bradley Manning is for 2 years before he gets a trial.
Yeah, and tortured along the way.
China. Especially Hong Kong, because they're a little different than Communist China. I'm sure you know more about that than I do.
Yeah. Hong Kong does operate under different rules than China does, just like Puerto Rico operates under slightly different rules than the United States. But not just like. Actually, there's a big difference. But, yeah. And I'm, up until yesterday, I was calling Snowden a hero because I saw him as a pure whistleblower. Now he's released some information, so I guess he's a leaker. I'm a little more ambivalent, but I'm still, you know, he's saying that he's willing to put himself in front of a court in Hong Kong. And, you know, if they want to try him for that or decide or whatever, I understand that. In other words, he decided to take that risk and that chance. But the national conversation that has been evoked by this, and you're so right about this, Ivan, should be about the privatization of the NSA, the privatization of the Department of Defense, all of these contractors, Wall Street's role in this, the fact that the defense contractors cannot be prosecuted, that you can't freedom of, for breaking the law, you can't FOIA them, you can't do a Freedom of Information Act. I mean, it's a corrupted system. And we need to be pointing that out. Ivan, thanks a lot for the call. Dan in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Well, Tom, I have to point out a couple of senators and representatives' mislabeling of Mr. Snowden's actions. In particular, over the TV broadcasts, I've heard Senator Feinstein, Senator Nelson, and Speaker Boehner, call Mr. Snowden a traitor.
Right. And Peter King has called not only for that, but also for the prosecution of of Glenn Greenwald, the journalist who broke the story.
Well, according to the Constitution of the United States of these wonderful Americas, Article 3, Section 3 specifically defines what treason is. And to quote you, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort.
Right.
We haven't been at war since World War II.
Yeah. Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, he has not levied war against the United States. And
so how,
And China is not our enemy. In fact, as he pointed out in an interview, they are our largest trading partner. I mean, we do a lot of business with China right now.
Well, and as I recall, The Guardian is a British newspaper, and aren't the Brits allies?
Yeah, there's that too. All excellent. Go ahead.
So the question is, why does Senator Feinstein, Senator Nelson, and Speaker Boehner not know the constitutional definition of traitor, but they sling it around like it was some sort of Saturday morning hash?
Because they're politicians. Because they, I would, you know, even though several of the, you know, two of those three are Democrats, they're getting money from the military-industrial complex. They're in bed with that institution. They, in many cases, pretty much have to be if they want to get reelected. And you can thank the Supreme Court for that. And, you know, it's just the way it is. And that's why we need more truth tellers. That's you know, Bernie Sanders over on his website at the sanders.senate.gov has reprinted an article that basically says, you know, arguing about whether Snowden is a traitor or not is the wrong question. The question should be, you know, what about this program, this PRISM program? Is it constitutional? Is this the kind of nation we want to be? Is this the road we want to go down? That's the conversation we should be having. So, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, in detail tomorrow with Bernie when he comes on the program. Lemoyne in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Lemoyne, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, I have a few quick points. You hear people say that this information is public, that you put it out there and that anybody can get to, that it's not true. If you try and, like, Hammond hack the Stratfor email server, and he's looking at PRISM. And, you know, if you cut into the internet backbone to try and split it, that is going to probably, you know, do the same thing, many federal charges.
Right.
So this isn't public information to begin with. And people say it's old news because, like, Bill Binney and David Drake and Schorock and Klein and all these people have been publishing on this or trying to speak about it for over 6 years. And the same program, right? And if it's that old kind of old news, then you didn't put anybody at risk. It's already out there. And the main point I want to make, though, is about the Fourth Amendment. I mean, that came about because of those general warrants. And I think the writs of assistance were written under these general warrants, which applied to everyone.
Right.
And the Fourth, you know, the general warrants, I think, were a big part of why the revolution succeeded, because they got everybody on the side of the Americans.
Yeah. Everybody had their home invaded. And why the Third Amendment is in there, too. Too many people had soldiers shoved into their spare bedrooms. Yeah, excellent point, Lemoyne. Thank you very much. Clearly, you know your history. And thank you for watching and for calling. We'll be right back. Let's have a discussion about polygamy right after the break.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's break from the NSA for a few minutes. This is an interesting new twist. Mark Henkel is on the line with us. He is the founder of truthbearer.org. Their slogan is Bringing Christian Polygamy to the Church. And the website, nationalpolygamyadvocate.com, for the National Polygamy Rights Movement. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Looking through some of your material here, I read this op-ed earlier that you had sent. You suggest that biblical marriage, actual biblical marriage, is polygamous. Do I have that right?
Marriage is not restricted to only one man, one woman, according to the Bible. Some may choose more than one, some may not choose, and may indeed keep themselves to only one man, one woman, but it is not a restriction according to the Bible.
Right, I understand that. And in fact, I've pointed that out on numerous occasions. Polygamy, you know, sociologically, you look at the arc of history, and polygamy tends to appear in societies where men die a lot, in societies where resources are scarce, there's a lot of warfare, or men are hunters in severe conditions, severe hunting, gathering conditions, and you end up with a lot fewer men than there are women. And in those kind of societies, polygamy actually makes sense, I mean, sociologically. On the other hand, you know, in modern America where, you know, we've got 50-50 men and women, the communities, the polygamous communities, the Mormon communities out in Arizona and Texas and whatnot, and Mexico, regularly have to dump their 15, 16, 17-year-old boys on the streets. You know, just, I mean, literally they go through and figure out which ones they're going to scrub and dump these kids. They're homeless, and because the men don't want the competition. You know, they want the young girls, but not the young boys. It seems to me that polygamy in the modern sense, other than, you know, if somebody wants to have two or three or four people all living together, I mean, without legal status, I don't have a problem with that. But it seems that polygamy, as, you know, if you're advocating this as a societal norm, that it no longer makes any sense at all.
Well, I have to first interrupt you in terms of utilizing examples of societies where warfare and they've lost men, or using rogue isolated sects. We're talking about the National Polygamy Rights Movement for consenting adults, consenting adults making choice. And the reality is that a modern secular Western society, America, we're talking about polygamy as a woman's free choice. For indeed, some women would actually choose it as an option. For an example, a very highly educated, high career woman might like to make a choice with yet another woman who's also wants the choice to be a stay-at-home mom. They make the choice for an excellent man, and by so doing, the career woman who has to travel, she can do so and have her career and know that the woman who wants to stay home, the children are being cared for by a woman who loves them, rather than shipping the children off to strangers, low-paid strangers, at daycare.
Well, so really, the modern polygamy movement
is about free choice for women.
Right. What about a man who works during the day a woman who works during the day and, you know, could have two, a woman who stays home all day and has one husband who works day shift or one husband who works night shift. I mean.
The National Polygamy Rights Movement for Consenting Adults is calling for freedom for consenting adults, unrelated consenting adults.
Okay. So are you specifying this as, is your form of polygamy, the form of polygamy that you're advocating, is it multiple women and one man, or can it also be multiple men and one woman?
We're saying government doesn't have the authority. It is about unrelated, consenting adults making their choices.
So it could be either one.
Consenting adults choose is what they choose.
Right. Okay. You know, I still know them. I have friends who are two couples, actually, who live together as a, I don't know what you call it, polyamorous, I think is the word that they use.
Well, there is a difference between
two men and two women.
There is a difference.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But you know, basically they're consenting adults and they're just living together. And there's no law against that, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, you know, the old sodomy laws and the old,
The irony is that uncommitment is allowed, but commitment is a crime. Talk about anti-family values. The reality is that polygamy is actually a crime for unrelated consenting adults to make their choice to do so.
If they try to get married, it's called bigamy. Are you saying that you're opposed to bigamy laws?
Not against dishonest bigamy in which consenting adults are not aware of other relationships. We're talking about unrelated consenting adults making their free choices for a marital relationship. Government has no authority to license, define, control, restrict that unrelated consenting adults making those choices and making that.
Are you polygamous?
That is not an answer I can say, because indeed that's the issues of the law.
Well, no, I mean, there's a lot of polygamous families. In fact, the typical way that the Mormons do it out in the open is the husband marries one woman and then the rest of them are just like girlfriends who happen to live in the house.
That is indeed the only way by which modern polygamists have the way around the law, as long as they're not acknowledging it, because indeed in some states, for example, in my own state of Maine, the mere act of purporting to be polygamous itself is a crime. Free speech is a crime in America today, with many anti-polygamy laws across the country in various states. Just purporting, and even if there's no marriage license,
right,
a married man with the full consent of his happily married wife calling a second woman wife, the free speech act of that one word is a crime today.
Or a woman calling a second husband.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whichever. It's a free, it's a crime. We're sure. talking, we're saying that just as Hollingsworth is about to be decided by the Supreme Court, and they're saying that laws were based on animus-based stereotypes, that's exactly what applies to polygamy. That
so are you calling for...
They're using animus-based stereotypes.
Yeah, let me...
Not unrelated to the society of America.
No, I got it. And Mark, I'm not trying to debate this with you. I'm trying to understand it. Mm-hmm. Are you calling for the legalization of polygamous marriages, which would require a whole new body of law to decide who gets what in the event of the death of somebody, you know, how long, who's been married, how long, all that. Are you calling for that, or are you calling for just an end to the wars, or to the, excuse me, the war on polygamy, to the laws that say that if you're proclaiming that your relationship is polygamous, that you've committed a crime?
We're calling for decriminalization of polygamy. And on the same basis that we have the exact same constitutional rights that those who choose one man, one woman, and those who choose...
Well, marriage is not mentioned in the Constitution, so I don't see how
that's correct. Marriage control is not allowed by the federal government, whether it's to choose one man, one woman, whether it's to choose same-sex marriage, or whether it's to choose unrelated, consenting, adult polygamy.
Yeah.
You're right. But so the fact is, if OMALs and SSMs get to have freedom, then UCAPs get freedom as well. That is one man, one woman, same-sex marriage, unrelated, consenting adult polygamists. America is about freedom for unrelated, consenting adults making their own choices.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with that.
That's what we're asking for.
I suspect
our constitutional and civil rights. Polygamy is the next civil rights battle.
Okay, so what kind of a cohort do you represent? I mean, how many people do you think are living polygamously in the United States who would come out if you were to decriminalize it?
Well, first, there are probably no more than 100,000 practicing polygamists.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, there are a vast multitude of more people who want the freedom of choice as unrelated consenting adults to choose polygamy, but because of the law, are thereby prohibited.
Right. So and specifically, you are not Mormon. You are an evangelical Christian.
That is correct.
And you consider yourself a conservative.
I do.
Yeah, a small government conservative. Okay.
Limited government constitutionalist conservative.
Fascinating. Okay, Mark Henkel, the nationalpolygamyadvocate.com. Thank you, Mark. Mark?
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think? I think that it should be decriminalized. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Hey, it's Thursday. It's that moment, the third hour of Thursday, when I have 3 minutes to talk about one of my favorite topics, science. Let's get geeky. Researchers have found that high fructose corn syrup can cause reactions similar to those caused by cocaine. Scientists in Canada discovered that in rats, high fructose corn syrup can cause behavioral reactions very similar to those produced by drugs that are abused, like cocaine. High fructose corn syrup, a form of sugar, well, arguably, is made from corn and can be found in sugary foods and drinks such as donuts, chocolate bars, soda. In an experiment, rats were fed foods containing varying levels of high fructose corn syrup. Next, the rats were given access to a lever, which controlled how much syrup they could receive. The more concentrated the syrup, the more the rats worked to get their little feet on it. Professor Francesco Leary at the University of Guelph, who headed the study, says that we have evidence in laboratory animals of a shared vulnerability to develop preferences for sweet foods and for cocaine. There is now convincing neurobiological and behavioral evidence indicating that addiction to food is possible. End of quote. These new findings are part of a growing field of knowledge into the effects that high fructose corn syrup has on our bodies. Research conducted in 2010 at Princeton University found that rats fed a sugary diet became nervous and anxious when the sugar was removed from the diet. The rats were thrown into a state of anxiety similar to the kind of stress that people feel during withdrawal from addictive drugs. And while word has gotten out that high fructose corn syrup should be eliminated from our daily diets because of its harmful effects, That could be easier said than done. As the Daily Mail points out, high fructose corn syrup can be lurking in some foods you'd never even think of. For example, some brands of canned tuna contain it, while some types of bread and even mayo count as high fructose corn syrup as an ingredient. So what's the bottom line here? Time to ditch the high fructose corn syrup, because when it comes to addiction, it might be harder to kick than cocaine and just as bad for you, maybe worse. Okay, back to polygamy. I just wanted to share my final thoughts on this. As we went into the break, I said, okay, yeah, let's decriminalize it. And then I started thinking over the last 4 minutes, if we were to decriminalize polygamy, people like Mark, you know, might be able to have two wives, or some woman might be able to have two husbands, and, you know, society wouldn't be harmed. I don't think that consenting adult relationships, polyamorous, polygamous, whatever they may be, by and large are harmful. But there is this sect of the Mormon Church that not only believes in polygamy and practices polygamy, but does so in a way that is like aggressively destructive to the young boys that they're bringing into the world. And it's causing harm, real harm. And many of the young girls who are born into these sects end up being wives, you know, at young ages and not being literate. And there's something really, really wrong in my opinion. It's, you know, about that religious form of polygamy. So I guess what I'd have to say is that secular polygamy, polyamory, all that other stuff, you know, good luck. I can't imagine it for myself, but good luck. But institutional polygamy, no. Because, like I said, it's, you know, you can't build a social construct that makes any sense out of it. John in Springville, Utah, it says you want to disagree with me. John, you're on the air.
No, I don't want to disagree with you. I enjoy your program, and I enjoy what you just said. The thing I want to do is clarify the use of the word Mormon.
Sure.
Mormon is a synonym for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Not according to the polygamous Mormons. They say that the Church of Latter-day Saints has lost its way. I mean, this is sort of the Catholic-Protestant split.
They can say whatever they want, but the copyright on the word Mormon is held by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Uh-huh.
So people that use it in connection with something like polygamy are really using it incorrectly.
Okay.
The Church disbanded the practice in 1897 and have excommunicated everyone that stepped forth and claimed to be a polygamist within the bounds of the Church. So the people that leave the Church and then practice polygamy are no longer Mormons.
Okay.
So it's just a semantic thing, Tom,
no,
but I do
point
appreciate
made.
Your...
Go ahead. I'm sorry, John. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
I said I do appreciate your program and your point of view on most everything.
Okay. Thank you. John, I'm just curious. Do you think that polygamy should be illegal? I mean, the Mormon Church ended polygamy relatively involuntarily. In the 1880s, as I recall, the only way Utah could become a state was if they banned polygamy, and the only way that the Mormons could still be a powerful political force within the state is if they stopped having polygamy. And so they all kind of got together and decided, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to get, you know, with the program. But you know, what's your take on whether it should be banned, whether it should be legal or illegal?
Honestly, my point of view is that the Christ in his day said that render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And as the Court of Last Resorts, which was the Supreme Court, ruled that it upheld all the laws that were levied against towards the Church, they upheld them. So therefore, the Church in actuality, in the final analysis, was that they would support the law of the land,
right,
and disbanded the practice. Now, it did bring them benefits politically, as you mentioned, and I don't dispute that, but the fact is until we feel a revelation comes, if and when a revelation comes to our profit, then we will obey whatever it is that the Lord gives us. Otherwise, we will obey the law of the land.
Right. Okay. So you'd be waiting for the word to come down from the church before you'd offer your personal opinion. I got it. John, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the correction on the... I didn't realize the copyright on the word Mormon was held by the church. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Thanks a lot for that. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So, national security... There's one of the... I've got to share this with you, but I'm running out of time. We'll be right back. It's the good, the bad, and the very, very licitricously ugly, the good. The Maine House of Representatives. On Tuesday, the Pine Tree State Legislature approved a bill requiring labeling of all food containing genetically modified organisms in a sweeping 141-4 vote. Now, the bill will be sent to the state Senate for a second vote, and if all goes to plan, the governor's office for his signature. Like the GMO labeling law passed in Connecticut last week, the proposed Maine law will only come into effect once five other bordering states pass a similar measure. Still a long way to go in the fight for food democracy, but any victory, no matter how small, is still an encouraging sign. Good work, Mainers. The bad. Twitter racists. When 11-year-old Sebastian De La Cruz sang a rousing rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner at Game 3 of the NBA Finals on Tuesday, the crowd roared in approval. Not everyone was so happy with his performance, however. The website Public Shaming has collected a series of racist tweets from Twitter users who objected to De La Cruz's performance because he is, quote, Mexican, end quote. Here are some examples. One user, Ken Bach, writes, this kid is Mexican. Why is he singing the national anthem? Another one, while to his comrade in bigotry, TJTHDJA, asks, who dat singing the national anthem at the Heat game? Unbelievable. Keep it classy, Twitter. And the very, very ugly Barry Accorti. While the still unnamed North Ridgeville, Ohio mother called animal control to report a litter of feral kittens living behind her house, she knew that the cats might have to be euthanized. But she didn't know that human officer Barry Accorti would handle the situation the way he did. Check this out.
He told me that the shelters are pretty much full and that they would be going to Kitty Heaven.
North Ridgeville police say humane officer Barry Accorti thought the homeowner knew what would happen next. But to her horror, the officer fired his gun and killed the five kittens just 15 feet away from her kids inside the home.
That's right. Officer Accorti shot a litter of kittens at point-blank range right in front of a group of little kids. And believe it or not, the Northridge Police Department has actually defended its employees' actions as appropriate. This whole situation is very, very ugly. Louise had something like that happen to her when we lived in Vermont. She was driving down the road, and there was a deer that had been hit by a previous car, and it was in the middle of the road, and it was still kicking, but it was just laying there in the middle of the road. It was one of these two-lane, 50-mile-an-hour, very rural roads. And she was with our two daughters, and she stayed, and they were little kids at the time, and relatively speaking, tens and teens. And she stopped the car and called 911, and a police officer came out, and she figured he would, do something, move the deer or something, but he got out of the car and just started shooting at the deer. And he ended up chasing, and the deer got up and started running away. And the guy just, chased him off the road. It just kept shooting at him until his gun was empty. And the kids were standing there screaming, no, stop. He never came over and said, this is what I'm going to do. The way he was shooting, the bullets could have ricocheted and gone anywhere. He didn't even say to the kids, get back in the car. I'm going to start discharging my. So Louise filed a complaint with the police department of this little town. And the chief of police called and ordered her to come to his office, which she did. And I was out of town when this happened. And tried to give her a dressing down, tried to tell her that she should not be lying about a police officer's conduct, that his officer told him that he had behaved appropriately and that he had made sure all the civilians were out of the way and everybody was in a car and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And Louise said, he's lying. And the police chief said, no, my officers don't lie. You are the liar. And at that point, living in a small town, we just decided, or Louise just decided, not to fight it. And she just left. But, man, that's bizarre stuff. I mean, watching an animal get killed. Anyway, a couple of things I wanted to share with you. I mentioned as we were going into the break, the Supreme Court, just to keep you up to date, you know, the Supreme Court today, because we didn't have Victoria with the news report, the Supreme Court ruled that human genes cannot be patented unless they've been modified by humans. So the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, which were patented by this corporation, Myriad Genetics, they can no longer hold that patent. And so they can patent their test for the genes, but anybody else can also patent a test for the genes, can come up with a test for the genes, which means that the $3,000 Angelina Jolie had to pay to find out that she had these genes will probably become $100 or $200. It's about the cost of the test right now. And as it becomes more widely available and other companies jump in, it'll probably end up being a $20 or $30 test eventually. This is a good thing. Also, a federal district judge in Manhattan has said that interns cannot be treated like slave labor, that the federal guidelines for what constitutes an intern, that is that they have to be in an educational environment, they can't be replacing a regular employee, those kind of things have to be followed. So no more essentially slave labor. So I thought it was interesting. Wanted to share that with you. So 866-97-THOM, our telephone number, and Tom in Holyoke, Colorado, you wanted to discuss corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup? Really?
Well, yeah, to a certain extent for GMO.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that if you're ever lost or something, that you don't know what is safe to eat in the wilderness, you should watch the wildlife, and if they eat it, there's a good chance that it's safe for you to eat? Well, we have cottontails that live around the house here, and when it's in the winter, rabbits.
Yeah.
And we put them corn for years now for them to get through the winter, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But since we have gone to the GMO corn, they won't touch it.
Really?
And so there is also at the end of the field where we plant sideways on the end to cover the turnaround marks, the corn picker knocks some of the corn off.
Mm-hmm.
And the cobs are there, full corn, and there are deer, there are pheasants, there are turkeys, there are rabbits, there are crows, there are other animals, rabbits, jackrabbits, that in the spring the corn is still laying there.
Wow.
They haven't eaten it.
Yeah.
And that's only been since the GMO has been introduced.
Yeah. This is thanks for sharing that story, Tom. This is why we need to be labeling our foods. This is, you know, thank God Maine passed this law. Connecticut has passed a law. There's a half a dozen other states that are considering it. We'll see where this all goes. Susan in Atlantic Beach, New York, listening on WWRL. What's up, Susan?
Yes, I just, you were talking about the privatization of prisons. And I want to remind people how profitable it was when adolescents were sent to correctional facilities and adolescent facilities, one of which was conveniently owned by Bain Capital, if you remember, CRC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was a judge who actually just very recently went to jail for taking under-the-table money from one of these for-profit child correctional facilities for sending kids there.
Mm-hmm. And in CRC, children died because it was meant for just for profit, and they had restrained children. And if you're in the medical field, someone being restrained, there's very strict rules. They have to be observed 24 hours. You can't have your back turned.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be someone there. They have to take off the restraints. And they had locked children in the rooms, and I believe that there were 6 wrongful death suits against Bain Capital.
Wow. Wow. Amazing.
It was a big Vanity Fair article. It was the dark side of Bain.
Yeah. This is you know, just there are some government functions that should be transparent, accountable, and, you know, if we're going to authorize ourselves to do this, we need to watch ourselves, and whether it's spying, especially on us, or whether it's running our prisons or our facilities for our kids. I'm with you, Susan. Thank you for sharing that. Charles in Montgomery, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Tom. I just was wondering, when did the Patriot Act amend the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution?
Well, the Patriot Act didn't. What happened was back in 72, you had the church hearings and all this awful stuff came out. You know, it all came out that all this spying was going on by the NSA. And then in 76, as I recall, maybe it was 78, but it was just a couple of years after the church hearings, as recommended by the church hearings, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was passed, which created FISA courts so that the NSA could continue to spy, but only with a court order. So they would be in compliance with the Fourth Amendment. That stood, and the NSA was following that law until 2001, when Bush or Cheney or somebody in their administration told the head of the NSA at that time that he could just go ahead and spy on anybody he wanted. And that's when we played the clip from that just a couple days ago, where he got in that argument with the reporter saying, you know, it's probable cause, you know, it's all that kind of thing. So basically, it wasn't the Patriot Act. It was the Bush administration. But the new FISA Act that has been signed is basically defanged the old FISA Act. So, you know, I think that we need a new FISA Act. And, you know, make it real. James Bamford is really the expert on this, and he's got a piece in Wired magazine right now that's worth reading.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, he was on our TV show yesterday or the day before. We should get him on the radio show because he's a very, very knowledgeable guy about this. Welcome back to the True People's Media, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Not a chance. Kate in Spring Hill, Florida. Hey, Kate.
Hey.
Back to polygamy?
Oh, well, back to polygamy and religion and back to me kicking a hornet's nest, I guess.
Okay. Go for it.
In the interest of full disclosure, I am an ex-Catholic turned atheist, so I am not an impartial observer, but I think that the problem with things like legalizing polygamy and things like that are less a problem of legalizing something that could be dangerous and more of a problem with the obsession in the United States with accepting anybody's beliefs, no matter how ridiculous or harmful they may be, until it gets to a point that we can no longer ignore them.
Yeah. Well, I am not suggesting that polygamous marriage should be accepted or acknowledged, and I'm not even certain that I'm in favor of decriminalizing polygamy, for the reasons that I stated, that there are these ex-Mormon sects. And by the way, the caller earlier had said that the word Mormon was copyrighted. Shano looked it up during the break, and it turns out that the Supreme Court actually turned down the request by the Church of Latter-day Saints to have a trademark for the word Mormon. So the polygamous Mormons can call themselves Mormons if they want, regardless of what the Church of Latter-day Saints says. But that's my concern, is that those folks that this is a lifestyle when it's practiced en masse, you know, in community, that is actually aggressively destructive to its own children. Am I making sense, Kate?
You are. See, I would just as soon see us legalize polygamy and make illegal the crazy things like a belief in multiple brides that can be under the age of 15, for example, or,
yeah,
you know, faith healing or things like that. But I am a realist. That's never going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you mean around the world or in the United States?
in the United States, I don't see us ever, you know, hinging upon any religious belief because we have the slippery slope argument from the other side. And
well, we've already done that. I mean, the Mormon Church asserted polygamy, asserted religious freedom, First Amendment freedoms, in their request back in the 1880s to remain polygamous, and the Supreme Court, you know, upheld the Utah laws and the federal laws that, or I guess it was Utah laws, that banned polygamy. And so the Supreme Court lost, the Latter-day Saints, Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons lost, and so they decided to go monogamous. But anyway, excellent point, Kate. Thank you for the call. Doug in St. Peter's, Missouri. Hey, Doug, what's up?
Tom, you have so many subjects come on here. You're getting ready to end your program. I've kind of changed it a little bit, and I'd like to give you a conversation that I had with a Lockheed contractor talking about the F-20, the Joint Strike Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting at a table in North Carolina. I was visiting my brother, and I started going into the problems with this Lockheed who, you remember, Lynn Cheney was on their board of directors when they were getting all these military contracts.
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
When her husband was vice president?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that's not good.
And I was going on about, because they were trying to make the V-STOL, they were trying to replace the Harrier with the Joint Strike Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to the guy. I'm a bit of an aviation buff. My dad was a test pilot, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about how the shaft keeps breaking on the turbines when they tried to fire it up and do the vertical takeoff and landing.
Right.
And the contractor looked at me and goes, "You're real smart, aren't you?" And I was like, "Well, I, you know, pay attention." He goes, No, "You're real smart. He's trying to start a fight with me over it." Because this whole, we've got, I don't remember if it was FDR, if it was Eisenhower. I think it was Eisenhower was talking about how we can build the schools.
Right.
It might have been FDR.
Yeah, no, it was Eisenhower. We played the speech a couple days ago. Yeah.
Right.
In 1953.
Right. And all these planes that they're making, and they're even proposing more new ones, a new stealth bomber.
Right.
We don't have a use for them. And instead of funneling that money towards our infrastructure and our schools and our education system and our social welfare programs, these people are gobbling it up, putting it in their pockets, looking at us, and saying, "You guys are not worth our consideration because we're making money."
Yeah.
But he went ballistic when I started bringing up the problems with the Joint Strike Fighter. It was funny to watch. But I had to leave. I had to get up and actually leave and go to the table where my brother and sister-in-law were. Just to defuse the situation, because this guy was, you know, ready to, he had a buddy with him. And of course, people are always more brave when they have people backing them up.
Right.
It's like, the corruption, you can look at what I put on the screen there was Thin Thread and Trailblazer. There's an excellent article in The Nation magazine on that describes the corruption that was done under Michael Hayden and how they had a system that would actually take care of all the FISA requirements, and they trashed that and went out of the house and had contractors bring up this Trailblazer, which has never given us one iota of usable data. It's just,
Well, you know, this is one of the reasons that the CIA started their own venture capital firm, but which apparently in part funded Palatine, I think is the name of the company that Mike Papantonio was talking about, was funded in part by the CIA, so that if you've got a private company, you're not subject to the same oversight that a government agency is. And so a government agency can get their work done through that private company in a way that you or I or the press can't do a Freedom of Information Act request. And, you know, that's a real problem. I think that's a real problem. Thanks a lot for the call, Doug. The quote from Eisenhower, by the way, he said, a nation at war or preparing for war, it's not just a theft of money. It's a theft of food. It's a theft of schools. It's a theft of hospitals. Anyhow, coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. We'll start out Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here talking about the important issues of the week. Plus, anything goes on Town Hall Friday. What do you want to talk about? Along with the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. You got to participate. hashtag You're It. Get out there. Do something. Go to pdamerica.org. Check it out.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.